Chapter 20.
The onslaught has two stages, Zare explained as we walked away from the ledge, and thankfully the oppressive feeling of despair was lessening with each step we took away from the pit. The first is the trial of the body, where you must brave the demon's spine trail in order to be successful. But the second is the one you must be aware of the most, and takes the most preparation. It is the trial of the mind.
I remember the trials well, Siskern spoke up, as he gazed at the twisted tree in front of us. The demon's spine is designed to physically tax your body beyond all thought, so you can endure the trial of the mind. Some have been known to have been taken by Snake Tree.
What? Snake Tree? As in that tree? I tipped my head back as far as I could so I could try to get the whole tree into my vision. But without wide-angle eyeballs, it was impossible to see every branch at once, even standing a good 50 feet away.
The tree that eats people, Horace clarified.
No, that would be ridiculous, Thass grunted. Do you see a mouth on that tree? It eats souls.
Well, I've never been here, obviously, so how would I... Did you say souls? The Falcon Man's brain finally caught up with his mouth in one of the most amusing double takes I'd seen outside of Chris Griffin on Family Guy. But also, what the actual fuck? I'm beginning to understand why the punishing gauntlet of nightmare is the easy part, I said as my gut clenched. So how exactly does a tree eat souls?
The trial of the mind requires the person to drink of the sap from the tree so the ancient Terran spirit that lives inside can strengthen your will like a true Terran, Zare explained. Ancient texts show how all Terrans used to partake in this ceremony, but in modern times it is only reserved for the low folk. That is just another reason why there is such hatred and disregard for the way the uppish have decided to live their lives up top and away from everything that makes them Terran.
If you were born in the upper echelon, Siskern, then why did you do the onslaught? I asked.
It was my idea when I created the ambassador role, the Raptor Man said. I wanted to honor my mother and Zara as well as find a way to bridge Tear's people. It seemed like a good idea, even though my father was not pleased.
Ah, yes. I do remember the sour milk expression on Grekus's face, Zare remarked with a wistful grin.
What does it feel like? I asked Siskern as I gestured at the tree.
The snake tree's sap burns like fire, and it will make you hallucinate your deepest fears, he said. This is usually the time when the ancient spirit will make itself known to you and ask you three questions only a true Terran would know.
When does the soul-eating part happen? Horace questioned. Because if we knew that, then maybe Alex could work on avoiding that at all costs. Agreed, I said on the heels of this last statement.
The old spirit can only eat your soul if you show it your fear, Siskern said.
So basically, if I survive the acid trip from hell, and then have a nice tea party with the tree spirit without showing fear, I pass? I asked.
Essentially, yes, Siskern nodded.
Great, I sighed and rubbed the back of my neck. So when do these trials start?
You will have time to prepare your weapons before the ritual feast, only I'm not sure how much of a feast it will be due to this year's harvest, the leader replied.
But he muttered the last part to himself as he rubbed his chin.
No matter. After the feast, you will embark upon the demon's spine, where you attempt the trial of the body, and you must bring back an offering from the pure spring that resides on the top of the trail. If you can bring the holy water back to Snake Tree, then the trial of the mind will last throughout the night.
And then? I questioned.
If you wake, you have succeeded, he said simply.
All or nothing. Got it. I frowned as I let my gaze wander out across the deep chasm to the rocks and hills beyond. Hey, what's beyond the pit?
Rock quarries, a mill, and, of course, our ore mines, along with the small villages and towns scattered throughout,
Zare said and gestured to the tree again.
It is said the snake tree appeared shortly after the demon tide. Its roots dig deep into the cliff's face, and the slimy sap coats the wall where the roots are exposed, which makes it hard for the demons to crawl up and out. Of course, some always do, and lately that number seems to be rising ever upwards.
Come. The curfew is almost upon the village. It's been a long day.
I nodded my agreement, and with one last look back at the mysterious otherworldly tree, we followed Zaire and Thas back to the village gates.
Thank you both for showing us around your lovely village,
Amaya said with her usual sunny smile, and I was amused to watch Thas's stony face flicker with something other than his brick wall impression when the Oryx woman's warm gaze fell on him. If anyone could make Drax's doppelganger crack a smile, I was betting it would either be her or Shay. Both of them together was like staring into the sun with night vision goggles, so it was more of an inevitability at this point that their effervescent charms would work.
Lady Zaire, I would like to speak to you before the night is out about ideas for an ascension agreement that might appease everyone.
Siskern spoke before the elder could turn away.
Very well, the alligator man sighed. The rest of you come to Fosha's early. The more daylight she has to work with, the easier she'll be to handle. Superstitious woman.
Horace and I promised to do just that, and then the six of us made the trek back up the path of destruction Justina the Grub had made when she rolled her way to the village.
Do you think Justina is okay after I scared her?
Zoe asked as we approached the cottage, and her cat ears flattened against her head as she frowned.
You adorable thing,
Shay said as she looped her arm through the catwoman's.
Have you been fretting about that creature this whole time?
Well, it's my fault I sneezed and scared her,
Zoe reasoned.
But you could hardly help it, darling,
the Phoenix woman argued. You're both adorable, I said, as I inserted myself between the two of them and looped my arms around both their waists. Now, let's explore what we gained from Senna. We then all split up and wandered around the property, and I took stock of everything room by room while I compared this estate with the other three I had. Overall, the cottage was a lot quainter than even Ithaca's rather basic design, but it was by no means without its welcome luxuries. For example, the whole left third of the cottage was dedicated to sleeping and had two bathing quarters. Even though Tear had a distinct lack of omite stones to do things like heat the water, there was a well out back next to a stack of big wooden tubs, a few gunny sacks filled with bars of soap, and bundles of herbs that would more than make up for the annoyance of having to heat the water ourselves. The right third of the cottage was a big open kitchen with a wide back door, a sturdy table, and a big circular hearth in the center. Above the hearth was a hatch that could be propped open with the long stick attached to it so the smoke could escape. That made the middle of the cottage the center of activity, and it doubled as a parlor and a study with a stone fireplace on the left wall that also connected to the ones in the bedrooms. We wouldn't be cold with every room in the house having access to central heat. It was clear it was a purposeful design, and I wondered how cold the lower regions of Tear got. So I added restocking firewood to the ongoing list in my head of stuff this place needed. We all came back together after taking some time to settle in, and we sat around the table while the Mech sisters dished us up some hearty-smelling stew in large earthenware bowls. The soup wasn't Arvid's masterpiece, but we were all too hungry to think it was anything other than a Michelin-star meal.
I've been thinking more about our project, Chief, Horace said as he finished sopping up the gravy remnants from the bottom of his bowl with the bread Gris gave us. If my calculations are correct, we can divide the orange and green stones between your dual blades to start. We spread the power out between the two blades equally, as opposed to forging them as one weapon with two parts.
You might have to break that one down for me, H, I said, and took a large swallow of water to wash down the salty, savory goodness of the stew.
No one's ever split a herald core before, right?
He started, and reached for the skein of wine in the middle of the table.
Usually, in order to imbue dual-bladed weapons like yours, the alchemist will use his own will to link the two weapons as one through the reforging that takes place. This way, the core's power is evenly distributed between the two to bring a perfect balance and harmony to achieve one purpose.
How does that work? I asked, and took the skein from him.
An alchemist can sort of direct or guide the intent of the weapons they forge, the Falcon Man explained. Enchanting artifacts with magic works in a similar way. In our case, we will be splicing the cores together to make two completely different cores that balance each other out. Then I will forge them one at a time as if they are separate weapons.
Okay, cool, I said, and handed the wine to Zoe on my left. You think that'll work?
It's still a working theory, and we have nothing to test it against, Horace said with a shrug. But basically, our friend Bartok was able to assign a numerical value to each rune of intent. What is that? I asked. Remember what it felt like when you summoned the power of your old sword, the Falcon Man reminded me. When I assessed the blue core, the intent behind the power was righteous anger. According to Bartok, that rune has a value of 5. But if you apply the rule of 8, like Bartok was attempting, adding a core with the intent of 3 would hypothetically make it stable. Based on my calculations, the green core you possess has a value of 6, because the rune of intent is decisive action, and the orange one is a value of 2, with the intent of speed. If we cut them in half and fuse them with the help of Ani's magic, then, in theory, each core will have a total value of 8 and will hopefully be in balance. Shit, Horace. I blinked when he finished his assessment. You really did do your homework, didn't you?
The Academy was wasted on you.
Anwar breathed and then practically mauled her boyfriend with a fierce kiss.
Your intelligence is very attractive.
All right, you two, get a room, I teased, and threw a hunk of bread at them when they started sucking face again. Fuck off, Horace muttered, between kissing the Ibex woman. The evening wound down pleasantly from there, as all of us enjoyed a rare calm before the storm in the parlor with the last of the wine. Eventually, I excused myself to the room on the second floor that had the biggest window, and I perched myself in front of it so I could listen to the sounds of the night as I sunk into my meditative trance. Or, at least, I tried to. I didn't know how long I spent trying to clear my mind, but the longer I did, the more conscious I was it wasn't fucking working. And, oh yeah, the ringing was back. A more accurate description would be that the ringing had never really left. I only stopped noticing the sound when I was occupied with something else, but now that it was just me alone inside my head, it was the only thing I could concentrate on. The harder I'd tried to block it out, the louder it became until I was scowling so hard my head started to throb with the tension. Why wasn't it working? I focused harder, but the whine in my ears rose in pitch and turned the dull throbbing into a sharp ache. My jaw and teeth also ached like I had just bit down on something cold. I probably would have spent the whole night bullying myself into a migraine if Amaya hadn't wrapped her arms around me from behind and pulled me out of the torturous cycle.
I can't,
I gasped, as I all but collapsed back against her chest.
Amaya, it's not working. I can't meditate.
Shh,
she whispered in my ear from behind, and then she helped us both to our feet so she could embrace my form that trembled from fatigue.
What's wrong with me? I asked.
You still must heal from what Senna did to your mind,
she soothed, as her hand trailed up and down my back.
You have to give it time, lover.
I shuddered at the small little endearment that slipped from her lips like a benediction. I'd never heard anybody call me that before, and somehow it soothed the icy cold anxiousness twisting around my gut like barbed wire. Fuck, I breathed, and then tucked my face into the curve where her neck and shoulder met. Her honey heather scent filled my lungs, and the last of the tension drained out of me.
Come on,
she finally said after my trembling subsided, and she led me back into the room and over to the large bed where my two wives were already sitting up and blinking at us with concern. Their heads were messy and faces crisscrossed with pillow lines like they'd just been pulled out of a deep sleep, and I didn't think I'd seen a more perfect place to rest than between their soft and open arms. Amaya smiled softly as she helped to tuck me in. But when she turned to go, all three of us, by silent agreement, reached for the Oryx woman and pulled her into the pile with us. Somehow, despite the worry and fatigue eating my brain from the lack of meditation, I slept. The next morning, I woke to the ringing in my ears, but once we arrived at Fasha's, I realized I was about to watch some epic magic weapons awesomeness, so the irksome noise faded to the background enough for me to ignore it.
Are you absolutely sure, Master Alchemist, that this little scheme will not destroy my house?
The compy woman asked as she tugged some thick leather gloves over her hands.
Fairly so, Horace said as he sat at Fosh's table/workbench while he scribbled a few things down in the margins of Bartok's journal.
Hey, that doesn't sound very confident.
She glared menacingly at the alchemist and she lowered the coke bottle goggles that made her look like a perturbed dragonfly, which lessened the effectiveness of her malice.
Don't worry, madam,
Anwar smoothly intervened.
He has always been fairly confident in everything, and it's managed not to get him blown up so far. And trust me, there have been ample opportunities.
So, you're saying he's lucky?
Fasha asked with a tilt of her head.
That would be a good descriptor of my brother, especially if we disregard the majority of that is sheer dumb luck,
Shay said as she joined in on the teasing.
Luck is luck, my dear baby sister, so regardless of your implication, I will choose to see that comment for what it is, thus a Ow! Son of a Porak!
The Falcon Man bellowed when the compy woman suddenly reached out and ripped a black feather out from his crest.
What the bloody dark hell was that for?
For me to wear as I do the impossible and risk my face being rearranged when I do this for you,
Fasha said as she examined the sleek black feather in the light.
You got what you needed, then?
He scowled as he rubbed the spot on his scalp where his feather was taken. And when he palpated the area, a look of dread flooded his face.
Alex, am I bald?
Relax, man, I chuckled as he bowed his head a little for me to see. It was only one feather. Your luxurious locks are still as voluminous as ever.
I'm too relieved to look into your sarcasm right now,
the Falcon Man said with a persnickety little sniff like the dork he was.
If you are quite ready,
the gem cutter said with pursed lips. But the sparkle in her magnified violet eyes told me she thought his antics were amusing rather than aggravating.
Yes, yes, all right,
he grumbled and stood up from the bench. And we all followed Fasha through the back door of her kitchen, and to the small wooden workshed.
You, taller ones, watch the yidderwebs,
the compy woman warned.
It's been an age since I last dusted. Good to know,
Anwar grumbled as she pulled some gossamer strings off her curved horns. When we were all inside the cramped space, we followed the compy woman over to some type of machine that resembled a drill press and stood in a semicircle around her. Fasha then stood on a small stool so she could reach the metal crank on the top of the machine, and when she started to turn it, the press began to rise from the flat pedestal.
Directly in half?
She asked as she held her hand out for the first herald core. I gave her the orange one first, just in case this didn't work. This way, if it was destroyed, I would at least have the more powerful one to try this again.
That should do it, yes, Horace said, and glanced down at the journal one last time.
Well, here goes nothing,
the compy woman sighed.
Everyone, move to the other side of the shed. No sense in all of us being maimed.
I was pretty sure that wasn't going to happen, but just in case, we all heeded her instructions. Fasha then reached for a small wheel lever on the side and began cranking it at a rapid pace. When she did this, a powerful jet of water sprayed out, and with her other hand, she maneuvered the head of the drill straight back. Before any of us had a chance to even think about holding our breath, the herald core fell apart in two pristine halves in a very anticlimactic way.
Is that all?
Zoe piped up as she stood on tiptoes to peer over my shoulder. Horace flipped through the journal, even though it was pointless, because Bartok never got that far in his research.
Yes? Yes, exactly as planned, hypothesized.
Thanks, Professor, I scoffed. But I still clapped him on the back when I handed him the green core. Let's do it again. Fasha repeated the process as quickly as last time, and soon enough we were rocking and rolling with four halves of herald cores.
Now what?
Shay asked with her arm looped through Amaya's.
Now we must temporarily stick them together so Horace can try to merge them,
Anwar said as she wiggled her already glowing fingers.
Go on then, you pretty thing,
Horace purred. And Shay and I made gagging faces at each other while the Ibex woman used her power to magically glue the halves together. Now there were two multicolored gemstones connected by a thin red band of light running through where the green and orange met.
This is truly fascinating,
Fasha said. And she curled up onto a wood box, so she could see better and poke Horace in the arm.
Keep going, Lucky.
The alchemist darted his glowing gold gaze down at the tiny woman with a small scowl. But he soon focused on the two herald cores cupped in his palms. Then he licked his lips and shifted on his feet. And the moment was tense as we all waited for what he was going to do.
Okay. Right, he said to himself, like he was gearing himself up for the task ahead.
After another beat, he then took one core per hand, balled up each fist, and breathed deeply through his nose. Gold light poured through his clenched fingers as if he was clutching handfuls of sunshine, and the alchemist's arms began to shake.
Horace?
Anwar asked, as she came around to face him. Beads of sweat appeared on the Falcon Man's forehead, which concerned me, and I walked up next to Anwar to see what was going on.
Gah!
Horace suddenly yelled out, and I tried to break his sudden descent to the ground when his legs collapsed under him like a folding ironing board.